Famous 80s sci-fi show like Star Trek, but not Star Trek, called Galaxy Quest, and at a sci-fi convention, real aliens mistake them for actual commanders.
It's a really lovely film, and it's a really kind of like nice little love letter to fans as well, and Star Trek, I guess, as well.
You don't need to be a sci-fi nerd. It makes sense as a story. It has character development. It's funny. It's charming. It's sad. It's fun. It's just really good. If you like Tropic Thunder, if you like Three Amigos, you're going to like it. But if you just like comedy,
yeah,
you're going to like it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Flitzwater Podcast. I'm joined by Helen.
Hello.
Izzy.
Hello.
And Simon.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about Galaxy Quest.
Never give up. Never surrender.
Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have Izzy and Simon. If you could say hello to our listeners, please, and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
Hello, I'm Izzy. I'm going first, not only because you said my name, but also alphabetically it is correct, because you haven't said our surname, so therefore I don't feel I'm stepping in. I am Izzy. I am a children's author. I write historical children's literature. It's not books, it's literature. I also present many a podcast. I do Terrible Lizards with Dr. Dave Hone, which is all about dinosaurs. I do the Zedlist Deadlist, and I do the British Museum member cast. But also I do this really silly, daft one every week called Seti Sopo, where me and this man called Simon Dunn discuss the opposite of things which do not have a natural opposite. And that man is opposite me right now because he's in my computer, aren't you, Simon?
I am. I'm a writer, apparently, although it hasn't felt like that for the last year.
What do you mean, apparently? Who's giving you that denomination?
The Emmys gave him one.
Yeah, that's true. I'm a scriptwriter and a novelist, and also, as he says, a co-host of the Seti Sopo podcast, which is where we work out the opposite of things that don't have a natural opposite. So,
like potatoes.
Yeah, what's the opposite of a potato?
Well, it would be something very square.
No, we're not doing
square.
Our podcast now, is it?
Okay.
Well, that was a teaser for the podcast.
So, that was a teaser, yeah.
And if you don't know how to spell Seti Sopo, spell opposites and then reverse it.
Yes. Yes. Not many people noticed that.
Yeah, well, how did you come up with a name for that?
Literally, we said, yeah, we can't do, we've got to get rid of the backwards rule, because otherwise it's just everything backwards. You have to be good. You have to say, what's the opposite of a motorway? It's Tarama Salata. Explain why. And do the, you know, do it
properly. You've got to show you're working.
Exactly. So you can't just have it always just spelt backwards. That's cheating.
But we just end up talking about like past memories and old films.
Well, you do,
because
that's what we
sitcoms
have.
And
yeah,
it's true. Most of it is just me going, when I was four.
Yeah, exactly. And me just going, well, when I was hanging around with Jenny Eclair last week, and you know, being all sort of 90s celebrity.
You were hanging out with her in COVID time.
That was the last famous person I got to hang out with before the lockdown. I did get to hang out online. I've been able to hang out with cool people. So, like, for Terrible Lizards, we've been interviewing all sorts. I got to interview Chris Packham and Penn Jillette. No, every bloomin' week I still have to speak to Simon. It's a terrible...
I was going to say, because I've listened to a few Terrible Lizards and I've listened to those episodes. Chris Packham was, like, one of my heroes, because I used to love the Weird and Wild show. So him, Michaela Strachan and Terry Nutkins were, like, legends to me.
It was weird. So it was good weird having him where you are now, Kobe. This is a thing.
Ooh.
This is...
He was also really enthusiastic.
I'd say he's nearly as good as you, Kobe. He's nearly as good, but not as good.
Yeah, well,
he's definitely better than Simon.
Definitely.
Simon, I feel you get quite a lot of abuse in this relationship.
Yeah, it is. I'm not sure if that's my fault or anyone else's fault, to be honest.
No, it's my fault, but it's deserved.
It's when strangers come up to you and call you a hamster, that's when it's... It's getting a bit out of hand.
He has been spotted. See, Simon is enough of a celebrity that people do recognise him from a podcast, which is pretty good.
Well done.
And abuse him.
We are talking about the film, which is your choice, Izzy, Galaxy Quest. So can you tell us why you chose it? And a synopsis in a minute or less.
Okay. So Galaxy Quest is basically about a group of actors who used to be in a famous 80s sci-fi show like Star Trek, but not Star Trek, called Galaxy Quest. And at a sci-fi convention, real aliens mistake them for actual commanders and they bring them in to help solve their war. And the actors fulfill their roles, kill the evil bad guy, Saras, and the convention is the best it's ever been. So that's my rough synopsis off the top of my head. And the reason why I chose it is Alan Rickman. I mean, it's a really funny film, but it's Alan Rickman. And it's got Sigourney Weaver in it, who I absolutely adore, Alan Rickman. And Tim Allen is also in it, and Rickman is in it, obviously. I don't really... Sam Rockwell,
You could have made a Tim Allen Rickman.
Sam Rockwell, before he was AFOD. You know, this is a brilliant film. I'm a big fan of The Three Amigos, which you can say it's basically The Three Amigos but in space, and loves it.
I mean, that was one of my questions, was I first time I watched it, I was like, this is The Three Amigos but with in space.
Well, I watched Three Amigos after this, so this is in my head.
Oh, really?
The Three Amigos is because this came out in what I think I watched this
this came I don't out think much later than I thought it did. This was 1999
yeah.
And I thought it was
earlier
than that.
It's because Rickman looks young and beautiful still.
I don't think he ever looked old, did he? That's a tragic thing about
him. He never takes his headpiece off, and that is a phrase I never thought I would say.
In the film, he doesn't.
Yeah, in the film. I was talking real life here generally, but what are your favourite Rickman films, I guess?
Best one is obviously Die Hard, because it's just amazing.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen.
Is probably I like the Harry Potters and his role in that as Snape. I think that was good casting, considering I think it was meant to be Tim Roth. Let me think. Is it Close to Me? I think that one is really weird. I think it's the one where he's married to a woman who is shagging her brother, and it's really dark and good. And it ends up, and it's like our childhoods, because we're of an age where we were still like prepubescent in like 1992, and it's the summer of 1992, and everything's sort of like set in that sort of really flowy kind of, and it's something that I vaguely remember, that weather in London that year, and it shows it throughout, and you're just like, oh, Clive Owen's bum. Anyway, so
remember the first time you saw Rickman? And it is really,
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and I was in the cinema, and everybody in the cinema was just like, "Oh, when he died." Mm. Sorry to ruin that film. Yeah.
Oh, in the film.
I don't think I'm ruining anything to say that, you know.
When the Sheriff of Nottingham died.
Exactly.
For that, and is that where he gets that massive axe thrown at him?
No, I think he gets stabbed by what's-her-face.
You know the bit where someone gets a massive axe thrown at
him? With his own dagger.
This child piped up in the silence after us. Is he dead?
That's good. That's always good when you get commentary. Yeah. But yeah, so... But Alan Rickman, I mean, basically, he is a comic actor who is forced to do evil villain roles in the way that, you know, often comic actors do the evil villain roles, and this is him doing beautiful comic acting. Because I think this is the thing about he used to like share a flat with Ruby Wax and stuff. He would hang around a load of comedians.
He was in Girls on Top.
Yeah, and he also did like things like The Secret Policeman's Ball. So I have seen him live, because I did. I went to We Know Where You Live live when I was a teenager, and so I've been in the same massive auditorium as Alan Rickman, and that makes me happy.
Helen.
I can't remember his performance that much in Robin Hood.
What?
But yeah, Alan Rickman.
It's the same as Die Hard, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very long film, Robin Hood, and there's films out there that
But he's got a studded codpiece. How can you not?
I'm all right for that. I think my main thing for me with Galaxy Quest is Sam Rockwell, which is probably one of his early, not probably first, but his kind of first big one. So I really enjoyed revisiting his performance in this, which apparently he based this performance on Bill Paxton in Aliens.
Yes, I saw that.
Which is kind of fun and makes a bit of sense. So yeah, it's quite a fun film, and I think it was quite ahead of its time. And when it came out, it suffered a bit from really poor marketing, and not many people saw it at the cinema, and it didn't really make much money. Kind of picked up a little bit back in the days of DVDs when Blockbuster was still around, and I think if it was made now, it would probably be more successful. And there was talk of a sequel, but unfortunately, because obviously Alan Rickman died, then didn't go ahead with it. But it's a nice little fun film, and there's like so much trivia. Like if you're a Trekkie or kind of vaguely interested in that, then a lot of the things that happen in the film are all based on true sort of Star Trek trivia facts and things, which like are really fascinating. So yeah, it's a good one.
It's officially the 12th best Star Trek film as well.
How's that?
And they took a poll at one of the Star Trek conventions.
Oh, okay.
And it polled in 12th place, which for a non-Star Trek film was pretty impressive. Sam Ratwell's character is based on an actual extra from Next Generation, apparently.
Yeah.
It was Will Wheaton.
And Data as well.
And Brett Spiner's stand-in.
Good guy.
So, he's done well for himself with that role. It's such a little role, but he kind of makes it his own, doesn't he?
Has he still... Has he properly broken out yet, Sam? Or has he...
Oscar winner, Sam Rockwell, star of...
He was April Beeblebrox in proper sci-fi. Because Hitchhiker's his...
He's not in any Marvel... Because he's still not... He's not A-list, is he? Is my kind of thing. And his one is
so
super...
Is that, if you're in a Marvel film, you've made
it. That's a high standard.
Is that the Kobe measure?
I mean, what if you're in a DC film? Are you just rubbish then?
No, that's
Edward
the Z-list.
I think for anyone who's been as well-lauded as him...
Well...
I kind of think... I still don't... see him in as many big films, and I wonder if it's his choice to not do that and just do these more character-based roles.
It's his choice. Don't we all just take anything that we can get?
I mean, would you have thought Mark Ruffalo would be the Hulk?
No.
Not at all.
He was the first choice, apparently.
Was he really? What, for the Edward Norton
one?
Yeah,
and apparently...
Wow.
They wanted Mark Ruffalo instead, and then the studio went with Edward Norton, and in the end, they ended up going back to Mark Ruffalo. I've been reading a lot of IMDb trivia at the moment. There's not much else to do.
Would you imagine Ed Norton being the Hulk? He's one of...
Well, that's true.
I mean, I could imagine Ed Norton being a pencil, because that's what he looks like. But, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's a pretty man, but he does look like a pencil.
His hair is very bouffanty, isn't it? You could imagine it as an eraser.
Is this one with a rubber at the end, or...?
Yeah, that's kind of his head. You know, he's a bit like Beaker, but with proper hair.
Are you guys Star Trek fans at all? How much of it did you relate to this? Or...
Well, at the same time as when I watched this, I went to the only Star Trek type convention I did was in 1995. This was when I was, you know, I don't think I'd reached double digits yet. But I went to the convention at the Science Museum. They had it because Voyager had just been released. And the Science Museum in London, you could go in and you had to pay £5 or something really expensive. And I got a catalogue, which I took home and I cut up and I stuck all over things because that's what I do with catalogues. And that's when I was first heard about Neelix, and I was very disappointed after that because Neelix freaked me out and still does. He's like the guide.
So
no,
yes.
He's not. Go away. Scary man. But yeah. He also married technically a child, but also a godchild, which is weird. Yeah.
So yeah, yes. The answer is yes.
I'm a bit of
Izzy is a bit of a Star Trek fan. I am too. We do talk about Riker probably a bit too much.
I think I'd probably rate my Star Trek knowledge as low.
Okay.
I've seen a few of the films and used to watch Next Generation, but I wouldn't be able to stake a claim on a quiz team about Star Trek.
Well, fortunately, you don't need to, you know anything about Star Trek to enjoy Galaxy Quest. It's just that do know about Star Trek, it kind of tops it. You can kind of see what they're making fun of. And, you know, it's little things like the Klingons at the urinals that you can just go, there you go, that's funny. I recognise that, even though obviously I haven't been into the gents' toilets at a Star Trek convention.
Well, Helen was saying it's ahead of its time in that it was kind of a love letter to fans, wasn't
it? Yeah.
In a time when fans were still kind of seen as a bit, go away, leave me alone type thing. And the whole thing, even with the Thermians, is you know, have respect for your fans. But
yeah, these Comic Cons are big. At this time, Comic Cons and those cons were super nerdy, aren't they? But now they're like the biggest business in the world. Like San Diego Comic Con is like where Disney goes to launch their A-list biggest film, tentpole films of the year. So it's a whole different, it's a whole crying difference from what's shown in this film, isn't it?
It's like the pre and post Marvel, isn't it? Effect.
Yeah. I'm not even sure you could make it now because it would be fan service at that point.
And also it would be, do you know what like I mean? The Thermians wouldn't be Thermians. They'd come down as Trump supporters or conspiracy QAnon theorists or something. They'd be completely suckered into a whole other branch of nerd. It wouldn't yeah, be as innocent. And that's the beautiful thing about the Thermians, the alien race that comes down and believes that these historical documents that they've been watching, the historical records, they believe that they're real. And of course, they're just a show. And the bad alien knows this immediately when he sees them. And that's such a great scene when...
I love the Thermians as well. I think they're so charming. And like, because they could easily have been, they're just stupid idiot type things. But yeah, but they're just adorable, aren't they?
They are very cute.
And they're Thunderbird.
And also, they're Veronica Mars's dad. It's their leader, and it's Veronica Mars.
I've never seen Veronica Mars.
What? You would love it. You would love it.
I'm going to act out the whole of Veronica Mars for you right now.
A long time ago.
I saw Rain Wilson as a one of them, mm-hmm. and also Sam Lloyd, who plays Ted in Scrubs.
Yeah, and Missy Pyle as well. This was like her first film role.
She's great. She's so freaky.
And Justin Long as well. And they obviously those two would go on together to work on Dodgeball. So there's a few people who we probably know quite well now that when this came out, it would have been like new person. And it's kind of fun, I think, when you do watch like comedy ensembles when you kind of don't know them that well, and then when you rewatch them so many years later, you're like, this is an early performance. They were good then, or they've got better, or they're a bit.
I find that with like Paul Giamatti is one of those when I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't know Paul Giamatti before Sideways,
and Philip Seymour Hoffman
as well. PSH.
Oh, that's Philip Seymour. Yeah.
And Mac from Mac and PC. They had the Robert Webb of America.
Who was
That was
Justin Long, wasn't it?
Probably.
It was
Justin Long, that's it. Brandon.
The nerdy kid.
Brandon, the nerdy kid is the Mac in the Mac and PC adverts with John Hodgman as the PC, and everybody wanted a PC because everybody wants John Hodgman or David Mitchell deep down. They don't want Robert Webb or Justin Long. They're a bit too pretty.
It could have been a very different film. It was very dark, wasn't it, the original edit, apparently. Much more sort of adult, much more swearing. And you can sort of see remnants of where they've badly dubbed some swearing.
Oh, really?
Especially Sigourney Weaver. She seemed to be quite foul-mouthed.
Of course she did. She had a boobs out. I mean, that's never happened. That's brilliant.
Well, you've not seen American Sweetheart.
I haven't.
Is that one with Jennifer Love Hewitt?
Yes, that is a really good film, actually.
You see, I think Sigourney Weaver would have made the best Voldemort. Because she's got...
Yeah, she would have done an amazing Voldemort.
In the Harry Potter films, much better than Ralph Fiennes. Because she, if you read the books, she's got the high voice, she's got the sort of like slightly skull-like, scary face, and she's got just the better presence, just to be terrifying, whereas Ralph Fiennes was not.
And also, she's not underused in this film, which she could quite easily have been, I thought.
Even though her character that she plays is there just to repeat what the computer says, which is one of the funnier scenes. It's a nice role for her.
It's my only job and I'm going to do it.
Yeah. I enjoy it when she does comedy. She's great. And
she should do more.
Yeah.
Also, I say she should do more. She's done loads, isn't she, really? So maybe she should do the amount she's done. I don't know.
Maybe you should do the exact same ratio of comedy to non-comedy stuff that she continues to do.
Maybe she should manage her own career and I should just shut up.
And Tim Allen's great. And that's the thing. Tim Allen's brilliant in this because you kind of really...
He's well cast.
He's immediately believable. I mean, at no point do you question he isn't that person.
He's not playing Shatner.
No, he's not.
As well, which
he's
is
not doing a Shatner impression
really
at any point.
A good choice.
And he is...
But he didn't even think the character was of Shatner. He said he based it on a Yul Brynner role from one of Yul Brynner's films.
Yeah.
And I think had it been a kind of direct lift, I think it would have lost an awful lot of, like, you know, Rickman being Spock and whatnot. I think that kind of would have detracted from it. The best parodies you should be able to watch without knowing the source material.
Shatner did enjoy it, though, didn't he? One of the things he said about the rock monsters, having tried to get rock monsters so many times on Star Trek for them to have signed them off. I don't know whether he was a bit confused about it, whether it's an actual Star Trek thing or not, but it's good to have that kind of approval going into something like this.
It does have the worst pun in the world, though.
Which one's that?
Yeah, the miners, not miners.
Oh, I know
you do, but it is the worst pun in the world. And I just love that. What I really, really love about it is the danger and everything else. But ultimately, you do get people going down to that silly eye. You know, it's the desert thing. The big, beryllium sphere or whatever it is. Dilithium, or I don't know, beryllium or something science. And they're just pushing it and they're rolling it out. And it's the most 1960s shot of action that you can possibly get. Everything is sort of like really, they're too far away from the camera. It looks really slow. You've already established that the aliens are really fast and this is just pointless and futile, and it's lovely. And it doesn't have the sort of overly, it's all self-contained and the story all makes sense. There is no point where, even though it is poking fun, it never sort of points the camera at the audience at any point. It's all, you know, which I think the Three Amigos and other similar films have done, is they sort of break that fourth wall a bit, and they don't. They keep it all in, and it starts in the convention and it ends in the convention. And I kind of think, I know it's not true. I know that this was written because a guy watched Nimoy, who plays Spock, do a, you know, little announcement about this, I don't know, something, and thought, oh God, it must be awful for sci-fi actors who are already stuck in these roles, and then came up with Galaxy Quest. But I do, how it looks like it came about was, what would be the most awesome Star Trek convention ever? And that would be to have a massive spaceship crash into it and a fight still to continue, and the winners, who everybody already knows, just zap a real alien and kill them in front of everybody and not to have anybody die. And I think that would have been the most amazing, you know, so... You know, it would be lovely to think the scriptwriters wrote backwards from that moment to how did we get there. That would be the best occurrence of this coming about.
If you want to get me to get really nerdy about story structure, we can talk about why it works as a story. It's an Into the Woods story. You leave the safety of your village to go and kill the mystical beast, and on your journey you learn more about yourself, and you come back to the village having
kissed the girl,
become a better person. But by getting what he wants at the midway point, which is a starring role again, he pays a really heavy price, and it does kind of keep upping the stakes really well. And that moment where the Thermians say, there's no point, we're the only ones left.
Yeah.
And it kind of really hits home to him that, you know, okay,
and that
this
bit,
is real.
It's really dramatic, that bit where you have the Thermian who's being tortured, Malthazar, and he's being tortured by Saris, and, you know, Saris forces him to reveal that the whole thing is not historical documents, it is just a TV show and it's all fake. And Malthazar just going, but why? And his entire life...
wail of agony.
Yeah, that's more torturous than anything that Saris could do. And it's just, it really works. And just as the sort of line that Alan Rickman has to say, by Granthar's hammer, you will be avenged. He actually gets to say it to somebody who it's the most meaningful thing. They've based their entire life on this phrase. And he gets to say it to them in their dying moments. And then he goes grrr and runs at an alien, which is brilliant.
He goes full on Hulk.
He does.
Really good.
It's very good. I enjoyed.
Yeah.
You have to understand that Alan Rickman is absolutely beautiful and wonderful in everything he ever did. So you just,
I mean, you said that's why you chose it. That's why you chose it, you said.
Definitely. I just also want to underline the fact that Sigourney Weaver's character is great, and it is a real sort of like frustration a voice of female frustration that isn't labelled. Oh, she's being really feminist and talking about it. It's literally her just pointing out how ridiculous her character is, but ultimately how important it is to the team. Because even before they go to space, Sigourney Weaver's character keeps the team together. She's phoning Alex to talk about Naismith and everything else and trying to make everything, you know, bring everybody together and bond everybody, which is ultimately what she does at the end. And I love the. There is absolutely no point in all the slammy bits. They're trying to get to the bomb, which obviously, or to stop the ship exploding, which obviously has to count down to 1 second, even though they've already pressed the button, because it's a TV show, and that constant reminder that it's all nonsense, but it's real.
Why are these here? Because it's in the show.
Exactly. There is no point to this. Whoever wrote this needs to be fired. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just engineered in there for dramatic content for the show.
It's just really funny.
Yeah, exactly.
J.J. Abrams said that the scene in Star Trek where they do the mass beam out whilst they're falling is directly based on that moment in Dancy Quest.
Really?
Nice.
But as a comedy film, I know it sounds like a daft thing. It is funny. Yeah. And a lot of comedy films aren't funny. And Mark Kermode has a really low bar for
three laughs.
If I laugh out loud once,
no, three laughs.
It's hard to make people laugh when you're not.
It's a three laugh test.
I think it's a very good way of judging a comedy or not,
especially when you're watching on your own. Because I mean, obviously, you don't laugh.
Well, I think that's the point. It's a low bar. It's like the Bechdel test. It's a low bar. If you have to have a line in the sand.
Ooh, does this pass it? I don't think it does it? Couldn't do, because there's only two females in it with speaking roles.
We don't know what gender the Thermians are.
Yeah, we do, because they literally say they take our females, and there are female looking Thermians. So
how they present,
think,
I guess,
that's the form they choose.
That is the form they choose, but therefore it's the form they identify with, and therefore they're female. Ha ha.
It probably doesn't pass the Bechdel test, but it doesn't need to.
Doesn't it?
Because as what we've talked about, Sigourney Weaver's character has agency. It breaks out of the confines of its own role.
The point is that it is overly a representation of sci-fi, in which case, it shouldn't.
Sigourney's character has a line where she's like, I had an interview and all six questions were about how I kept my boobs in my costume. Yeah. And that a year or two later, Jerry Ryan was still facing the same sort of questions as Seven of Nine.
Still 2021 people are still...
I mean, Black Widow.
Are still facing that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you keep your bum in now? It's changed, Simon.
Shall we head over to our FlixWatcher scores?
Hello, I'm Sam Pay.
And I'm Martin Zoltz-Austwick.
And we are the two hosts of a podcast called
Song by Song,
where we listen every week to a track by the musical artist Tom Waits. You might know him for his gravelly voice. Very nice. His appearance in films, but also his multi-decade spanning career involving blues, jazz, and all sorts of other kinds of experimental music.
So we're basically like a book club for Tom Waits. And if that sounds like your cup of tea, you can find us at songbysongpodcast.com or wherever you get podcasts.
The scores are all out of 5, and you may have decimal places if you wish. And we'll start with you, Izzy, with your recommendability, please.
Oh, okay. So recommendability, I'd recommend this to absolutely anyone and everyone, because it doesn't have any sex in it, so you can show it to kids and they'd get along with it. And it's got explosions. I recommend it to people who don't know sci-fi because it's still a really funny, dramatic film with poignancy. I recommend it to Alan Rickman fans because it's got Alan Rickman in it. I recommend it to Tim the Toolman Taylor fans, Home Improvement, because it's got Tim the Toolman Taylor. No, I don't know anybody who wouldn't like this film on some level, because it's got the good story, it's got the good characters, it's funny, and it makes you laugh.
So what, 5?
5. 5. Yeah, why not?
Simon?
I kind of agree. I think it's a film you can watch on its own. You know, of its own sake, you don't need to be a sci-fi nerd. It makes sense as a story. It has character development. It's funny. It's charming. It's sad. It's fun. It's just really good. And that's all boils down to having a very good story structure. Mm.
It's tight, man. It's not a wasted moment.
It is tight.
Tight.
And
like Sigourney Weaver's boobs.
Like Sigourney Weaver's boobs. Someone had to say it, didn't they? And I'm glad it wasn't me. But yeah, if you like Tropic Thunder, if you like Three Amigos, you're going to like it. But if you just like comedy,
yeah,
you're going to like it. It's well cast. Everyone is good in their role.
And it'll lead people to Three Amigos as well and things like that. We haven't talked about Three Amigos and why it's... Or Tropic Thunder. I mean, the Three Amigos is basically this in the desert in Mexico with a load of Mexicans believing their films to be real. And obviously they're just actors and showmen. But...
Galaxy Quest is less problematic than both of those other films.
Much less problematic in terms of, you know, it's a bit sexist, but it's not particularly racist or anything else. What it doesn't do, that Three Amigos does do, is do that really sort of surreal comedy, The Singing Bush, The Invisible Man, which I really enjoy, but I'm really glad that Galaxy Quest doesn't do it. Because, as you say, it's such a tight, and it feels like a film.
Well, there's moments of surreality, because you have those aliens, for example, and they look like children. Oh, this one's in pain. They're going to say, and then they just dive into it. And the Inside Out pig thing, that's definitely, you know.
But it's not, it's part
but
of
it's
the
all
plot.
Of itself.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it feels of itself.
It's not like
it
there's suddenly
like
a singing magical bush from the Bible
film.
In it.
Yeah. No.
You know, there is, exactly. there isn't.
So.
But the
in answer to the question, my score is 5.
Helen.
So definitely agree. It's a really lovely film, and it's a really kind of like nice little love letter to fans as well, and Star Trek, I guess, as well. That saying, I think there are some people who will just be like, I'm just not interested, don't like Star Trek, not interested in it, even if it's not actual Star Trek. And like just don't kind of understand like fandom and not quite be into it. So I'm going to give it a solid 4.5. And I really like Sam Rockwell in this.
How much of that 4.5 is Sam Rockwell?
How much would it be in 4.7 if he'd shaved off the moustache? That is the question.
I'd take him with moustache.
I think the moustache is part of it,
isn't
it?
I bet you would.
I'm going to go for 4.2, I reckon. I think it's... Ooh. I didn't watch it at cinema. I remember it coming out and I just thought, that's a bit wank. And
I think that's what most people thought, actually, when they saw the trailers and everything.
Well, that's what I mean, exactly. So, and I still think... I think it still lends itself to people kind of going, I don't really... Like what you said, Helen, I think people kind of go, I kind of get it, but also it's not...
You see, is the thing, though. When you're recommending to people... This is, you know, you don't recommend things that they are definitely going to want to watch that at the moment they see the poster for. You recommend things to people that you think, actually, this is a really good film, which you probably wouldn't realise you enjoy.
Well, this is
that's what my 0.5 is for those who I know that they wouldn't enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. There's that caveat level where you kind of think...
That's interesting.
Toby knows more people than me.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that right?
He knows less cool people than you.
Repeat viewing score, is he?
Well, to be honest, this is probably the 8th time I've watched this. So 8 out of 5? Is that...
No, it's not, so that's not allowed.
It's high. I'd say
you've been on this show before, Izzy. You know how this works.
You know how
I'd say I'd give it a 4, simply because it's not something that I immediately clicked on when it came up, because I'd already seen it all a bunch. And also, you need to be able to forget the jokes in between the jokes, because otherwise they're not as funny. So I'd say give it 2 years before you watch it again, and then it'll be really fresh again. If you watch it immediately after, so repeat viewing, definitely, but not immediately.
So what does that mean? 4. And you can have decimal places.
I know I can, but I choose not to. It just happens to fall on a nice round number because I don't like it messy.
Simon.
I don't know. I've watched it a few times, but I don't know. It's not a film I ever go out of my way to watch. And I saw all the love it was getting on Twitter when it was first announced that it was coming onto Netflix at the start of the year. And that surprised me. I thought, okay, I'm quite surprised that people have as much love for this film as it does. So
I'm kind of with Izzy. I think you kind of need a break between it, and it's always a nice surprise to come back to it and realise, oh yeah, no, it is as good as I remember, if not better. So I am going to go with 3.7.
Helen?
So I definitely didn't see this at the cinema, but I'm pretty sure I saw it, probably rented it, perhaps, or at least saw it when it Sky when it came out. And I've seen it a couple of times since watching it now, and enough time had elapsed between that time and this time for me to enjoy it. But don't know whether I'm going to be in a rush to go back and see it anytime soon. So I'm going to give it a 3. An hour 40 minutes odd, so not a great deal of time you're losing if you do go back. But yeah, so 3.
Yeah, I watched this about 6 months ago, before it came back on, before it came on Netflix. I watched it for the first time, I should say, about 6 months ago, towards the start of the first lockdown. I was like, oh yeah, I've still never seen Galaxy Quest. And so I rented it off whichever Prime or whichever one is on. And when it came on Netflix, obviously 6 months is too small a time. I think I completely agree with you guys. But I still, I think I'll be leaving it like 4 or 5 years in between watches rather than 2 years.
You got better memory than we do. That's what that is.
Possibly, yeah. I just made a long list of films to watch in between Galaxy Quest.
My metric is, if the film comes on at 11 o'clock at night, just before you go to bed, will you finish it to the end?
No.
What films would you? But what films would, if they came on at 11 o'clock and you're about to go to bed, what film would have to be on that would make you watch the whole film?
It'd have to be a super short film, like a Wallace and Gromit.
Okay.
But
we're talking like 90 minutes max, like, even
I'm
if it's
29 minutes max, Wallace and Gromit.
It's Die Hard with a Vengeance for me. That is always on really late at night, and I always have to watch most of it. Or The Peacemaker, which is one of the most underrated.
Oh dear, is that just because you have trouble sleeping?
Well, yeah, I have chronic insomnia, but The Peacemaker is a really underrated thriller. But anyway, it's by the way.
I should say by 11 o'clock, I've been in bed by at least an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're up early as well. You sent us like messages about this podcast like before I was up by a long way. You're like efficient, Kobe.
Parenting duties. He's up at all hours.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I used to wake up early anyway. I used to cycle in Regent's Park at like 5:30 in the mornings.
You're mad.
Sorry, guys. One of those annoying people. Repeat me. Was it 3, Helen, did you say?
3 for me, yeah.
I'm going to go for 2.5. No, I like it, but I think part of it is because I had literally hadn't seen it for this year, and lots of people built it up. And when you have that kind of weight of that expectation, and you're like, "Oh, it's fine," that kind of deflates it a bit, doesn't it? Small screen score, Izzy.
Well, the issue with this is it doesn't really matter. This is what 1999, and it's the CGI. There's a lot of CGI in it, and the CGI isn't great.
I was wondering if this was to be done now, would the CGI still look like that? Because I mean, for the ships, for example. Because it's taken.
It kind of fits in with the vibe, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does. It's of its time, but it's not as though looking at the CGI on a small screen, you're going to miss a joke. No. Other than there are details which you might miss. For example, Alan Rickman's hair poking through his cap after he'd been fighting. That's quite funny, the way little things are mixed up. But the one thing where you will miss out watching it on a small screen as opposed to on a larger screen, and because I've never watched it on a big screen, I'm talking about a big screen as in television rather than like a tablet or your, you know, phone.
We're talking cinemas is the big screen we're talking about here.
Is the big reveal where, because all this time, Tim Allen's character believes that he's just Jason Nesmith, just believes that he's working with these really overly eager fans who've set up the stage and he has to, you know, talk to this alien. And the big reveal is when they send him home, he's expecting them to call him a limo and instead they fire him into space. And the beautiful reveal where he's covered in jelly and he's basically standing outside of the spaceship covered in jelly, looking out into the universe in a total perspective vortex moment, just going, whoa. I think that at the time it was done was amazing in terms of graphics and everything else. And still now you need that reveal. So I would recommend putting it on the big screen. And just for that, I'm going to knock it off. And I'm going to give it a 3.
Ooh, Simon.
Well, it's kind of counterintuitive with CGI. The bigger the screen, the better CGI looks. Even terrible CGI, because because of the resolution. A big screen isn't good resolution. It's actually quite bad resolution, which is why films often look so different on a small screen, and CGI, which would have passed the cinema test, doesn't pass the cinema test on the small screen. And, you know, luminosity and all sorts of reasons, but we won't get into that. I think the CGI really stands out. I think the model shots of the ship are absolutely fantastic. And Izzy refers to that moment where it reveals the spacescape. What you don't get on the small screen is the joke that was done in the cinema, and I so wish I could have seen it, is that the screen goes from normal widescreen and it physically opens up to the CinemaScope screen. So as that's revealed in the cinema, the screen physically gets bigger as well. So purely for that reason, there's a joke that requires it to be seen in a cinema. It's got to be quite a low score, so I'm going to give it 2.
Helen?
So I didn't see this at the cinema. I've only ever seen it on TV side screens. And I thought the CGI actually held up quite well, considering it was probably meant to look a bit hokey and to fit in with kind of the, you know, nostalgia 70s style, 80s style TV anyway. So I thought it was fine. And I think this is kind of like a perfect film to watch on a Sunday after TV kind of vibe. So I'm going to give it a 5 for small screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5 as well. I think the CGI is exactly what that's what I was thinking now. Even if it was made now, I think there's still, with a few tweaks, not make it look as good as they made the USS Enterprise in the most recent Star Treks, for example. It would look the same for all intents and purposes. It needs to look hokey. It needs to look hark back to the historical documents, as they refer to them as. I think it'd be quite nice maybe if I'd seen it with other people. The first
That's true, all comedy, isn't it?
And that's potentially the other reason. But otherwise, I think from a viewing point of view, 5. Engagement score, Izzy.
I'll just add to your last thing, Kobe, that you don't need to see Cher Alan Rickman ever. So engagement, I would go, 5. I love it. It's great. What are you on about? Definitely. I can chat with anybody. I mean, it's one of those ones where I've literally never met somebody and we've talked about films, and this is one of the films we talked about. Yeah. So, I mean, and gone into in a big way. I think this one and Reservoir Dogs. So if that's the level we're talking about in terms of good film, then 5.
Simon?
The metric is how it keeps your attention, is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
It's a comedy, it's 100, an hour and 40 minutes, you know, that's the right length for a comedy. I don't think they need to be longer or much shorter. I was watching it. I very rarely watch on my computer screen, but I had to watch on my computer screen, and I'm much more willing to wander off when I'm doing that, and I didn't do that with this at all, so it's going to have to be it's not a fully 5. I'm not going to say I didn't kind of go and check Twitter at one point or two, but that's more to do with me having seen it. So, I don't know, 4.3, something like that.
Helen?
So I'm going to give this a solid 4 for engagement. I don't think it's kind of like a pretty solid story arc, as you've already talked about, Simon, so you can kind of guess where it's going to go. So you don't need to be stuck with it. So, just about the right length, keeps me engaged enough. I did do a little bit of IMDb-ing / reading about like the little bits of trivia because I've seen it a couple of times, but still solid 4.
I'm gonna go for 3.5 here. I think the first time I was like into it, second time potentially because it was literally within 6 months, I was like, you know, happily knobbing about on Twitter, but also Twitter's been so entertaining these past few days, so
interaction has been away from it.
I'm impressed that you. I'm trying to think. Would I have gone back to it had I seen it 6 months ago? But you felt that you needed to go back to it.
There's still things that they're in there, and again, because I knew I was going to watch it with half my eye on the second screen, and it was not really any. It's not. It wasn't a chore to watch it again. And you know, I'm a professional, Helen. You know, we do this podcast. We make a lot of money from it,
exactly.
So we want to make sure that, we're giving the most up to date opinions. And that gives us an overall score of 3.98125, which is good.
Is it? I would have wanted it to be in the fours, but that's my fault for giving it a two or something for something.
Yeah, you gave it a 3.
Should have given it more scores.
You gave it a two, Simon.
That was more of a lament that I didn't get to see that brilliant joke in the cinema. So.
Yeah, I mean, like I gave it a low score for small screen as well.
But I took both your points. I think you can happily watch it on the small screen.
Okay, guys, so let's head to Twitter. And just for everyone listening, do follow us on FlixWatcher. We are at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, because we always put a shout out before we record and gives you an opportunity to give your opinion and be read out in this case. And look out for tweets like this where we say, we're reviewing Galaxy Quest with Izzy Lawrence and Cy Dunn from Seti Software Podcast. You guys don't have a Twitter account.
No, we don't.
What's the matter with you?
Yeah, we just, you know, I've got so many podcasts, I'm not updating Twitter that often anyway.
Okay.
So, I mean, you should definitely follow me.
And the website,
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Well, you can give those details at the
end. We've got a wiki.
You've got a wiki? Oh, well, that's surely it's more work than Twitter.
Well, you'd think.
Anyway, have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and your score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout-out on FlixWatcher. And we have a few responses for Galaxy Quest. Cy, do you want to take us with the first one?
Trent on Tess, she was surprised by this movie. She found it very enjoyable and it was a fun watch. And she gives it 4 out of 5 stars, which is kind of roughly what we've given it.
She was surprised by it because she was recommended it and she enjoyed.
Yeah.
Aren't you surprised by stuff that you aren't recommended? Because if someone said, here's a thing, it's amazing, then you're like,
no, but it depends who recommends it. If Simon recommends me something, I have a very low expectation of it being good.
These recommendations it doesn't matter who recommends it, doesn't it? Because sometimes
It really does.
You've recommended it, have you?
It's not going to be good, is it? No. But turns out it was brilliant. So it's surprising. So Alex Elliott says, who is Alex Kid 11. Hopefully that's not his age, says Galaxy Quest riffs on all aspects of the genre, from the episodic nature of a TV show to the fans who read far too much into every detail. It starts making fun of the fans and it gives them love in the third act. 4 out of 5.
Helen?
I didn't know we were going to read this one. Someone just goes, 9. We asked for clarification and they replied saying, sorry, must have pressed the wrong number. I mean 4. And that was Ronnie Castle.
Ronnie Howard.
I blame you two for dragging the scores down. You two have dragged the scores down. So everybody else has said 4. It's a solid 4 from the audience.
I dragged the scores down. It was my fault.
And now it's 3.8 or 3.98.
Shouldn't have given it such a low score on small screen then. We were bumping it up.
You're missing jokes.
Totally.
So, Izzy, can you sign up by letting our listeners know where they can find you online?
If you go to iszi.com, that is izzy.com, iszi.com, you can find out all about me. And terriblelizards.co.uk is a really fun podcast. And I suppose Seti Soppo as well.
SetiSoppo.com.
You still doing Zedlist?
We are still doing Zedlist. Unfortunately, it relies on live audience stuff.
Oh.
So, no, we're not. But if you're into your history, you can listen to the British Museum member cast, where I get to interview all sorts of historians and archaeologists from around the planet.
But Zedlist it's evergreen, isn't it? It's not topical, so they can still go into your back catalogue, right?
Oh, yeah. So. There's like 80 episodes or something ridiculous, and it's all about obscure people from history. So if you want to know about some weird stuff that went on that makes today's news look normal, and yes, today, whatever's happening in 2021, today's news will look 12 boring days in comparison to like a woman who gave birth to rabbits.
Simon.
Happened, it's true.
How do I follow that? I'm at Cy Dunn on Twitter and my website is simondunn.me.uk. I blog every day about rare sitcoms, all sorts of things.
He literally has blogs about like ovens and sitcoms.
I went through a period where I was blogging about the different ovens in sitcoms and how you could see different ovens in one sitcom from the other. That's kind of how into the weeds I get with it. So
yeah,
or you can buy my books, buy Izzy's book as well. It's fantastic.
It's called The Unstoppable Letty Peg, and buy Simon's books. And if you want to giggle, Normal Verse is very funny.
Well, thank you very much, guys. Say goodbye to the listeners. Well,
thanks.
Goodbye, listeners.
Bye.
Hello. It's the opposite of goodbye.
That's the opposite, yeah.
Yeah.
Well done.
I'm funny.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell him Flixwatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.